The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
This is usually one of our favorite evenings of the year, the Leilion. It's an evening when you have an opportunity, you alone, and then you with your daughter, to really get a feeling of some of the things that we're trying to do here in school and some of the hashkafas and ideas that we're trying to get over. This year, we are working on the idea of Emuna, which is a little different than things we've done in the past. We're not really using Yud Gimel Ikrei Emuna necessarily, but we're just trying to give over to the girls basic concepts in Yiddishkeit that every person should have. Tzvi Maminit, Hashgacha Pratis, that Hashem is with us all the time, Shvisi Hashem L'Negi Samad, Gamzu Tohu, we're doing this month. And different areas where we see the girls, by the way, are doing beautifully in this, and teachers are noticing, and I'm getting back feedback from the girls, stories they're writing and things, how they're really starting to understand what Yiddishkeit is about. It's not just doing specific deeds, it's a whole way of thinking and of looking at your life and of looking at Hashem. We're very fortunate to have Rabbi Shai Kohn, the director of Priority One. I think this is his specialty, Emuna. One of his specialties, one of his many specialties. And he's going to be speaking to us on how we as parents can inculcate ideas of Emuna into our children and how to deal with them. Rabbi Kohn.
In case you need more seats. Okay, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate this opportunity to share a few thoughts with you. Before I begin, I would like to qualify the topic that was slated for this evening. And by that I mean, I recently had the chance to speak to a group of teachers, in a girls' school, high school, and the idea was also to talk about inspiring and inculcating Emunah in the classroom. That's the way, at least, it was introduced. And I spent about an hour and a half with them. I spent about an hour and 20 minutes talking about something else altogether, and maybe 5 minutes about the basics of Emunah. And it wasn't an oversight, at least not from my perspective, but it was really based on the realization that what it's really all about is really something else. It's not about Emunah. Emunah is a very, very simple concept. In fact, it's so simple that it's not even Emunah. It's Yediyah. It's knowledge. Klal Yisrael is privileged to be the only nation and the only religion on the face of this earth that has knowledge of its origin and the origin of its Torah from the Creator of the world Himself. A direct and public revelation from the Borei Olam to the masses of an entire nation, millions of people, who recorded this information as eyewitness testimony that they themselves witnessed, not that they heard about, and passed it on faithfully from generation to generation in identical texts, which were copied one from another, which proved to be identical no matter where they've been found over the thousands of years of our history. And not only that, this text has so much information that no human being could have known at the time, that besides its eyewitness testimony, it also has evidence, clear evidence, that it could only have been authored by the Creator Himself. It's really very simple. In fact, I just heard from a gentleman who is actually the founder and probably the conceiver of the whole concept of these seminars that they do, the Arachim seminars that are very popular in Eretz Yisrael, Dr. Shalom Srebrenik. We just did a seminar this past the weekend, and he said something very interesting. He spoke about his mother. He says his mother was a 7-year-old girl before the Holocaust, and Sarah Schneera stayed in her home. They came She was traveling, you know, I guess trying to enlist students and so forth for her project, or enlist support for the project for the school that she was starting. And she stayed in their home. And the mother remembers that she, Sarah Schneer, explained to her that how she knows that the Torah is from Hashem. And she told her something very simple. The Torah says, "Atem re'isem kimin hashamayim dibarti imochem." You saw yourself that Hashem, that I spoke from heaven. "Atem re'isem asher asisi b'mitzrayim." You saw the miracles that I did in Mitzrayim. And she said to her like this, "A crook says, I saw." I can say whatever I want, I saw. If you believe me, you don't. But if I say you saw, I must be telling the truth. Because you can't tell a group of people, even of this size, that you saw something, especially miraculous events, that you never saw. Just can't be. A crook will say, I saw. I can say whatever I want. But you saw, that must be the truth. And that's all she said. And what's interesting is this woman went, Rahman Litzlan, through the Gehenim of the Holocaust, and she became irreligious. She became a later on Baruch Hashem in life. She came back and she was, she lived an appropriate life. But for a while, she couldn't deal with the Rabbeinu Shalom. She couldn't take it. She was angry. But she says, "I never doubted for a moment the truth of Torah Misinai. Never for a moment. I knew it was bullshit. Sora Schneer explained it to me." She says, "A crook says I saw, not you saw." So really, the Emunah, from any size and any perspective and any way we go, is really a very, very simple concept. It's really very simple. The problem is, and this is really the problem that we face, that oftentimes many people, adults and children alike, are motivated not to pay attention, are motivated not to want to hear, are motivated not only not to want to believe, but not even to want to know or deal with what they know to be the truth. And that's really the issue at hand. And I think that this issue is most maybe simply described by fast-forwarding from Maimon Har Sinai to Moshe Rabbeinu's last droshes in Sefer Dvorim before he passes away. Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to the whole Klal Yisrael, and he reviews with them all of the miraculous events that they witnessed. He tells them to remember Maimon Har Sinai and what they witnessed, and the Yetzias Mitzrayim, and he talks about everything that they had in the Midbar and all the miracles of their 40 years of miraculous existence. And then he says, "V'yodato hayoim," you should know it this day, not believe it, but know it. They knew it. They went through Yetzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, Maimon Har Sinai, and certainly their parents did, and even the parents that may have died out, the children were under 20 at the time, who are now adults. So there were millions of people who witnessed these events. V'yodato hayoim, v'hashevoiso elavovecho, and return it to your heart. Know it and return it to your heart. The Targum says, means, return it to your heart. If I know it, and I know it with such clarity, and I stood by Har Sinai, and I went through the Yamsuf, and I lived in the Midbar for 40 years, and I ate mon today for breakfast, as I've done miraculously for the last 40 years, v'lechem yoimayim v'yoim hashishi, how can you tell me v'ashivu yisrael v'avecha? Who could lose it? What are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense. And the best way that I know to make sense of this is something that a Rav, who lives not too far from here, told me many, many years ago. He said he leaves his Rosh Yeshiva's picture on his desk. And he says when he feels like bottling or talking Lashon Hara or something, he puts the picture face down. He says, that's what we do with the Rabbeinu Shalom. For your Dato Hayom, you know. What do you mean you know? Of course you know. Eyewitness testimony, and you are the eyewitnesses. Later generations also know it. Because a crook says I know, not you know.
The Torah says, you know. The first generation testified to their children, we saw. The Torah says, Atem Re'isem, and we gave it over. That generation of millions of people gave it over to their children. Not that they believed that these events took place, that they witnessed these events. Eyewitness testimony to their children, and passed down from generation to generation, accurately in the Sifrei Torah that are all alike today throughout the world. And not just in a text, but with a lifestyle that's constantly reminding us of the events that took place. All of the mitzvahs that are Eidus, Zeichel Yitzias Mitzrayim, Shabbos, and Yontif, and Kiddush, and Tefillin, and Tzitzis, and Mezuzah, and Pidyon HaBen, and Vayter, and Vayter, Zeichel Yitzias Mitzrayim. We live a lifestyle that testifies to the authenticity of the document that's been passed down accurately from generation to generation. That yediyah that generation knew, we knew as well. We know as well. The Teretz is, even that generation was capable of taking the picture and putting it face down. If I feel like doing something that I'm not supposed to, I was given the bechira to be able to choose to focus on that which I know to be true or to ignore it. Much today I would say the same way that people smoke. How does a person smoke cigarettes? Is there a person who voluntarily gives up 5 years of his life? You know, nobody wants to do that. And is there anyone who could dispute the fact that that's what they're doing? But when I'm doing it, and it feels good, I know how it feels good. All it does is take away the nicotine craving. It doesn't even feel good. Not that I know from personal experience, but that's what I want to do. I'm blind to the self-evident truths that I know, not believe, to be true. Therefore, I believe, I spent too much time on this topic already. The discussion this evening is not about emunah. It's not about what we know. I would almost say guaranteed that if our children are happy in their Yiddishkeit, in their homes, in their religious homes, in their schools, in their community, with their friends, in a proper Torah sviva, they have no issues. They have no problems. The problems begin when they're not so happy, and they're not so appreciative, and they're not so successful, and they don't enjoy it so much. And then, in order to cope with the dichotomy between the truth and the pain, or the truth and the depression, or the truth and the dissatisfaction, they have to start to take that picture and put it down and pretend and lose focus and imagine as if really it's all not true. I had a very, very interesting experience this past weekend, this Shabbos, this seminar that we had. It was a seminar given for not yet religious families. But there were a number of not now religious ex-yeshiva students. It was very, very interesting. And the seminar is very powerful. And the impact that it has on the not yet religious is very different from the impact that it had on the had-been, but not now, religious. The not-yet religious are overwhelmed. Wow, you mean it's real? You mean it's true? You mean this eyewitness testimony that has survived to this very day as to what happened at Har Sinai? You mean it was given to us by the Creator Himself? You mean there's evidence that shows information that no human being could have known at the time that shows that this is all real? Wow. And not only that, this is the way to happiness. Spirituality is so important. The human being can't be happy without a spiritual component to their lives. Happiness is about feeling good about yourself and Torah and mitzvah, serving the Creator and knowing that you're fulfilling your purpose for which you were created and put in this world. What can make a person feel more valid and more happy than that? Wow, it's unbelievable. And the Torah talks to the problems that we have. Shabbos is not a burden. Shabbos is an opportunity to have a life.
It's to extricate oneself from all of the shackles of our daily existence and to give us peace of mind. Menuchas ha-nefesh u-menuchas ha-guf. Gewalt. There's nothing like it. And they talk even about Taras HaMishpocha, which we would think would be such a turnoff to these people. They say, what are you talking about? This is the greatest thing. If society would have this, there wouldn't be such a divorce rate. There wouldn't be such familial discord. People would be rejuvenated every time. It's a beautiful thing. These people, they become Bali Tshuva. Those that have been there, done that, don't respond the same way. Why not? So, goes like this, I think. You're going to prove to me it's true? I know that. I know that. You didn't prove me anything. El Amai, you're going to tell me it's going to make me happy? Baloney, it hasn't. I haven't been happy. I haven't succeeded. I feel that this world is too judgmental, is too critical, is too intolerant, doesn't allow for any individuality. I can't act myself. If I have a question, that question has to be ignored, and I can go through it, oh, so forth and so on. So you can't tell me this world is going to make me happy. So, what's the response? One young man, it's interesting, summed up the response of the yeshiva bochrim that are maybe not such yeshiva bochrim today. He got up there at the end and he said, I've got to tell you the truth. I do things I'm not supposed to do. And I'll probably continue doing things I'm not supposed to do. But when I used to do things that I'm not supposed to do, I would always tell myself, aye, the truth, Torah, God, eh, who knows anyway, maybe not. I knew it was true, but you know, maybe, who knows? I don't know really what happened in Har Sinai. He says, today, from now on, there's no way I could ever say that again. I know what happened. It's real. It's true. He says, I'll probably still do bad things. But since I know that it's true, eventually I'm going to get my act together. And I'm going to not, once I cannot rationalize that this is not the truth, and the rest is academic. It will follow. It will happen. And I believe that that's really the issue that we have to work on this evening. I think what we have to do this evening and what we have to do with our children is to create an environment where the Torah way of life is so appreciated, is so important, is so refreshing, is so validating, is so fulfilling, is so precious, is such a privilege that there's no way in the world that they want to leave. And once there's no way that they want to leave, then the truths are self-evident, to quote somebody. Anyway, this is really what I think we have to talk about a little bit this evening. First of all, I think we have to know a very simple piece of child psychology, which may qualify all of us for being considered children too. And that is that we tend to generalize our happiness or unhappiness and blame it on the total environment in which we find ourselves. When I'm unhappy, the world is a miserable place. Everybody is at fault. Everything is no good. Everybody is black and bleak and it's just impossible, unbearable. And when I'm happy, there used to be a song like that, I shouldn't tell you that. When I'm happy, the whole world, how is it? When you're happy, the whole world smiles with you. That's right. You know, that's it. The whole world is happy, everything is good. So, our children have to be happy. The biggest problem, in my opinion, about happiness today is that everyone's looking for happiness. Everybody, there's more books written about it and more seminars given and lectures and so forth. And the only problem is, nobody seems to find it. And it occurred to me a number of years ago that the reason is very simple. They don't know what they're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking for, you could stumble on it. You'll never recognize it. What's happiness? Probably the highest form of happiness is osher. Ashrei yoshev b'sechem. David HaMelech said, Achashualti Beis Hashem, Shivti Beis Hashem. David HaMelech said, Ashrei Yoshvei Beisecho. That's true happiness. kosher.
I can't resist with a group like this telling you a little personal joke. A number of years ago, I'm not going to tell you how many years ago it was, I went to Israel for a date. Those days it wasn't so fashionable, you know, just to go for a date. And, you know, things weren't going with the shidduchim over here. And I heard about this. I knew the family, you know, and everything. And I figured, we'll give it a shot. And it was a wonderful relationship that we had at the very beginning. Because I didn't speak a word of Hebrew and she didn't speak a word of English. We got along just great. It was mamish like, you have no idea. Since then, we both learned each other's language. But anyway, I think it was the second date that I asked this young lady. I said to her, what do you want out of life? You know, what do you want? I wanted to get to know her a little bit. So she said, Ani rotza liot meusheret. I thought she said she wants to be rich. I was ready to pack my bags and get out of there. Until, Baruch Hashem, I don't know how, but I figured out between the second date and the third date that all she really wants to be is happy. Osher is a very high-level form of happiness. The sheirish of the word in the Lashon HaKodesh defines what the concept is. We know that. The sheirish of Osher is Yishur, validation. Happiness is about feeling good about yourself. If we feel good about ourselves, we're happy. If we can assure that our children will feel good about themselves, they will be happy. If they're happy and they feel good about themselves in school and at home and in the community and with the friends, and they're not going anyplace, everything is fine. They'll be happy with their Yediyah and with their Emunah and with the Torah and with their Misinai and with the Borei Olam and with everything. No problems. All we have to do is make them happy. And now that we know the definition of happiness, it's a little bit easier, not that much easier, but a little bit easier just to know that they have to feel good about themselves. Well, how should we talk about this? Should we talk about all the things that we need to make our children feel good about themselves? Or should we talk about all the things that we in our society does to make them feel not good about themselves? What's the best approach? Everybody says the positive approach is the best. So let's talk about what we do to make them not feel good about themselves. Why don't our kids feel good about themselves? Number one, and please forgive me, and just forgive me. Number one, our kids today feel that they're not individuals. They feel very moldy. They're all alike. They're expected to be exactly alike, just like everybody else. They're expected to think alike and talk alike and everything. Dress alike and look alike. Everything. How devastating that is, I can only tell you. And again, I'm not suggesting that we buck the system completely and suggest all types of bizarre wardrobes and makeups and activities and hobbies for our children. But we must be sensitive to the fact that their individuality has to be respected and accounted for and taken into consideration. There's a famous Mishnah that everybody quotes in Sanhedrin. Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Fourth parak in Sanhedrin. It says, Chayiv kol echod ve'echod loimar kol oilom nivra bishvili. Wow. What could be more validating? Everyone is obligated to say. That means me, my children, everyone, everyone. Every child, every person. Kol oilom nivra bishvili. And, you know, to say it, and I guess I heard once from an Odom Godel, he says, Chazal say you should say it. It doesn't mean you should believe it. You know, some people believe it. But yes, we could believe it too. Hashem would have created the whole world for me. I'm so choshuv. What could be more validating? Kol ha'oilo nivra bishvili. Bishvilcha too, and bishviloi too, and bishvileich too, but bishvili. Givaldik. What we do is, we forget to read the phrase that precedes these words. It says,
the uniqueness of the Bnei Yerilim. It says that he created everyone from Adam and Chava, and yet it was from one mold, and everyone's face is different. Everyone looks different. He says, a human being, when you have a mold and you create coins from a press, you have one mold and you create it. Everyone is the same. Everyone is the same. That's it. This is the image I created. Every coin is the same. Not so the Bnei Yerilim. He created everyone from one man, Adam and Chava, and yet each one looks different. Then the Mishnah says the word, Lefikoch Chayev Kol Echod VeEchod Loimar Kol Olam Yerushuni. Therefore, why? Because we look different. That's why we should realize that the whole world was created for us. And what if we all look the same? The whole world could have been created for us too, so we all look alike, and the world was created for each look alike. And if we look different, and now we understand more, the whole world was created for me. What are you talking about? Lefikach. It's only because we recognize the individuality of each person that each person is capable of feeling the world could have been created for me. But psychologically, if I don't have that sense of being an individual, I can't imagine the level of chashivus that I have in order to allow myself to say, Kol ha'olam divrei bishvili. It's a bit of a profound thought, but it's so true. We need that sense of appreciation of our own uniqueness. Just because I look different, that's enough. I'm different. Ah, now I can believe Kol ha'olam bishvili. But if I look alike, same difference, I can't believe. Sense of individuality is what gives us that sense of our own hashivus. And if happiness is about validation, if validation is uplifted with hashivus, and hashivus only comes, we're only obligated in that hashivus only because we recognize each person is different, how important is that individuality? I know to walk into Brooklyn and to preach about individuality. There are two doors to this classroom at least, so maybe I have a chance. So I brought a bodyguard along too. Anyway, so but I think we have to face the reality. Moshe Rabbeinu faced that reality when Moshe Rabbeinu was informed that he's going to pass from the world. And he turns to the Bnei Yerilim and he asks him for a successor. He has four items on his short list of his requests. The first one is Vayom Parshas Korach, in the middle there, Hamishah, I think it's around. Vayomer Moshe El Hashem, Yifkoid Hashem Elikei Horuchos Lechol Bosor Ish Alo Eido. And Rashi seems to be bothered by a modern Loshon, Hashem Elikei Horuchos Lechol Bosor, Yifkoid Hashem, appoint a leader, Ish Alo Eido. Rashi says, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah went like this. Rabbeinu Shalom, Goli V'yodua Lefonecho, you know too well that each and every person is different. Appoint a leader, Sheyuchal Lizbol Kol Echod V'Echod Lefi Datoi. Appoint a leader who can tolerate each individual according to their own individuality. This is not for a family of 10 kids and not for a classroom of 30 students. And not for a school of 500 students, but for a Klal Yisrael of a few million nefoshos. The first item on the short list was the leader's ability to deal with each one as an individual. And Rashi tells us it's a sevel. Sevel means it's suffering. It's not easy. It's much easier to make a mold, shove everybody in, and if they don't fit, let it break. The ears fall off, the nose falls off, the head, who cares? But that's not what Yeshua, that's not what the manik to take over for Moshe Rabbeinu needed as his first requirement. The ability to recognize, appreciate, and suffer the individuality of each and every individual member of the millions of members of Klal Yisrael. I think that we have to find ways to make our kids feel like individuals. We have to be attuned to their individual needs, desires, uniqueness, talents, chesroinus, and address them. But I have to caution you that there's something very important to be aware of.
Many people believe, and not wrongly so, that if a student is not succeeding in academics, in, let's say, in Torah academics, in, you know, learning Torah, so we have to find something else for them to succeed, to feel good about themselves. And then, you know, there'll be a certain measure of validation, and we've compensated. Music, art, dance, sports, what have you. Okay? The problem is something else. Our children have really learned much more than we realize. Our moistas hachinuch are really much more successful than we realize. Our homes are really much better at conveying the value and the chashivus ha-Torah than we've realized. And our children know that Torah is the best eschoira. That the achievement in Yiddishkeit, in learning, in Torah, in growth, in spirituality, that's the most important thing in the world. Therefore, if they're not successful at that, then being successful at sports or at music or at art or at dance or at a play or acting or anything else, it's not going to compensate enough. Because, oh yeah, I'm the best actor, I'm the best musician, I'm the best... But I still don't understand Rashi and Chumash, so what is it all worth? Now, the kid may say what it's all worth. We know it is worth something. It does make them feel it. It's a, as a second, third position, it's better than nothing. But it's not enough. In order for our children to remain steadfastly loyal to Yiddishkeit, and in order for us to become more and more immune to the terrible magefa, and it's a magefa, if there was a word that was stronger, I would use it. The plague that exists out there of so many of our children, sometimes starting in the elementary, in the junior high school, through the high school grades, and sometimes starting way after high school when they've been in I had just this week a seminary graduate, just in the last... Today, a seminary graduate and a yeshiva bocha who was learning independently in Beis Medrash, one of the choshevs, the yeshivas, off the derech, off. And it happens, and it's not such an unusual thing. In order to develop an immunity to that, they have to feel that sense of happiness in the nurturing Torah environment in which they're growing up. And in order to feel that sense of happiness and validation, they have to feel good about themselves. And if they haven't felt good about themselves in Yiddishkeit, then there's something that's always going to be bothering them, because they know that Yiddishkeit is more important than the music and than the art. And they have to find success. Now, that's very nice. So I would be... I would have to accept a fair criticism of those who would say that, thank you very much, you came here, you depressed us. There's nothing practical about all of this. In fact, it's like the worst news possible. And it's in preparation for the tinus tomorrow, something like that. Well, I don't think it's that bad, and I'll tell you why. There is something we can do about it. Now, again, I come more from the boys' chinuch than from the girls' chinuch, but it's not that much different. One of the things I can tell you is that children have different learning styles. And I sometimes discover over the telephone, let alone in a private meeting and talking with them and learning with them, that this lo yutzlach of a kid who's been pegged as intellectually limited, slow, not so capable, average, a little below average. We have all these ugly stupidities that we call this. There's no stupid Jews. They've called us every name in the book, every dirty name in the book. You never heard the epithet stupid Jew. Nobody ever said that. Nobody. Believe me, they would have said it. If they would have found it someplace, they would have said it. If they would have found one, they would have said it. There's no stupid Jews. There's some that are a little bit smarter than others, or some that are a lot smarter, but there's no stupid Jews. And most kids, Ruba, have the ability to learn. They just haven't been challenged yet. They haven't been discovered yet. One of my proudest moments as a parent and I think it should be one of my daughter's proudest moments as a mechaneches, was when she was young, I think she was still single, and she was teaching in one of the local schools, and she discovered a kid, a failure, a lo yutzlach, in the fifth grade, who had failed every test in every grade until she got to her class. Completely, just impossible. This kid is no good. She can't. She don't get anything. My daughter discovered that she can't take a written test. She started giving her oral tests. She became an A student overnight. Overnight. Nobody discovered it. Nobody realized it. She had a different learning style. She couldn't, for some reason, she froze up. She did. She, I don't know what it was. I don't remember. I don't know. But that's it. There are young men, and this I assume there are young women too, that they don't know what's flying in the classroom. And the reason that I've discovered is because there's too many extraneous pieces flying at them at the same time. And they don't have so many hands to catch it all. This piece of information and that piece of information, another piece of information and that piece of information, this and this and the other. And the guy doesn't get it. I don't have such a good memory. I don't have such a scope to catch it all. But I got seichel. Do to me like Ben Franklin said, and I'll be okay. Tell me, I'll forget. Show me, I'll remember. Involve me, I'll understand. I can understand. I may be able to understand better than this guy who catches everything, this genius, who can pick up everything at lightning speed and is capable of keeping up with the curriculum that goes a mile a minute and has everything and can regurgitate it at a test. But I understand. But my problem is, as an understander, that something I don't understand, I can't even deal with. I can't remember it. I don't even get it. It's too much to understand all at once, because I have to understand. There's a famous story, I don't know if I should say it, it may be misunderstood, but I'm going to say it anyway, and please don't misunderstand it. A famous story between three G'dayle Olam standing and talking and learning. There was Rabbi Aaron Kotler and Rabbi Chaim Oizer, who not only were they the giants of the generation, but they were the speed demons of the generation as well. The speeds of their minds was unbelievable. And it was Reb Naftali Trop, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Radin, the Radin Rosh Yeshiva. When Reb Naftali was, they were talking and learning, and Reb Naftali lost it. He couldn't follow. And he started to cry. He didn't know what was going on. He couldn't keep up with the conversation. And when Rav Shatzkis was a Talmud of Radin of Naftali, was Masvid his Rebbe, he said the following. He said, Naftali ayolo shlucho noisei nimrei shofar. He said, Reb Naftali had a very sharp and fast mind. But since, besides that, even so, he gave Imrei Shofar. He said beautiful thoughts. He trained himself to analyze. So by the time, and he brought this story, and he said, by the time he finished analyzing the first thing that they said, they were already all the way someplace else. So he couldn't keep up with them. But it wasn't for lack of capability. It certainly wasn't for lack of intelligence. It was just a different style of thinking into things and not being able to work with them until he, many of our children are guilty of that same crime. The need to understand, to analyze, to internalize, to feel they got it before they can deal with it. And we have to be sensitive to that. And if they're not getting that in school, we have to try to find a way for them to get it. And sometimes they need some kind of tutoring, but the tutoring shouldn't just be to give them all of that information. They may need a certain minimal amount to pass a test. And sometimes we have to negotiate with the school, hey, my kid can't handle this massive information. I don't know what massive information you give here. I'm not sure I'm talking, but listen, they're going to go out to high school soon, so this is relevant. If it's not relevant in the 6th grade, what?
7th
grade, it'll be relevant in the 10th grade. So it's important for all of us. And anyway, even if they can't, I get someone to learn with my kid who can, even if they're not going to do that well in school, first I explain to them. They have a different way of thinking. And the school works this way. I'm not going to talk about whether to criticize the school or not. We should not do that under any circumstances. But the school teaches this way. You have a little bit of a different learning style. You're just as good. You might even end up being better. You might be more creative. You might be more analytical. You might be deeper in understanding. But you can't do it. So you get someone who could learn with them and give them a geschmack in the same general text that they're learning so they could feel good about it and good about the Torah and good about themselves on the wavelength that they can handle. Very important piece of information. And it's so true. It's so true. I see it. I can spot it a mile away. There are kids that they say they're just, like, I get a call that says, you know, my son is really a very weak student. I say, is he intelligent? He says, well, he's, you know, he's not really, he's average. He's very street smart. You know these street smart guys? And the girls, I guess, too, although I hate that term, street smart girls. But these street smart guys, they're very smart. That's not just they know only about streets, but not about studies. They just never did the studies, or read the, they may not have learned how to read the studies. But they're smart. Maybe they think differently. They need a different system. This is one piece of advice which I think is critical. Let's go to some other areas to see what also has to be done to make our kids feel better about themselves. Our children tend to feel that they're doing a lot of things, but they are viewed as incapable of understanding why they're doing it. Well, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? Why can't I do this? Why must I do that? And you know what the answer is? 100 years ago, there was one pat answer that everybody gave. And it was the worst answer. It was the truest, the ultimate truth, and it turned off more people to Yiddishkeit than anything else, right? The answer was, who's going to tell me? Es steht geschrieben in the Torah. Or maybe if you're Sfardi, you said it a little bit differently. You know, but that's all. The Torah says so. The ultimate truth. It turned off a generation to Yiddishkeit. Why? Because I can't even ask a question. I can't even, you must think I'm really stupid. Worse than that, they think we're stupid. Or they think the Torah is stupid. Something is bad. Something goes wrong with that formula. You know, but let's say in its best case scenario, I guess you don't want to tell me I'm not smart enough to understand. You have to do it. That's all. You have to do it. It's so invalidating. It's so annoying. It's so disturbing. It puts me under such a sense of force to do something that doesn't make any sense to me. So what am I? I'm a pawn. I'm a peg. I'm being manipulated. I'm being moved around. I'm not a mensch. I can't even be told why I'm doing something. That's the hallmark of a human being. Why am I doing something? Now, I know you're going to tell me that they're supposed to do it just because it says in the Torah, and that's the highest level, and anything else is shaloi lishma. It's even worse than shaloi lishma, and this is the madrega. Let's get off the high madregas. In today's world, if we keep our kids to the basics, they'll eventually reach the madregas. If we expect the madregas from them, which probably we haven't achieved either, but that's besides the point, and that we do often, we may not get anything at all to show for it. But in case you dispute this concept, let me give you two examples, which if anyone has any disputes after this, then so be it. Sefer HaChinuch, in Parshas Vayikra, in the mitzvah of Kol Sor B'Chol Dvash Lo Yisaktiro Ishe L'Hashem, we're not permitted to bring honey or leaven on the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdosh. The Sefer HaChinuch, a work that was composed some 500 years ago by one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, the Baron Halevi, not sure who he was, seems he was a Talmud of the Ramban. A bar mitzvah gift to his son, to his bar mitzvah, giving him a sense of understanding and appreciation of all of the mitzvahs. What the mitzvahs are, the concept of the mitzvah, the shirish, the root, which he called the tam v'toelis, the reasons and the benefits of the mitzvah, and the many of the dinim of the mitzvah, and so forth. He gives on each one of the mitzvahs a shirish, a tam v'toelis, reason and benefit. On this mitzvah called Sor B'Chol Dvash Lo Yisaktiro Ishe L'Hashem, he says, I don't know the reason. And he almost didn't write a reason. But then he says, I'm afraid, if I don't write a reason for this mitzvah, and my son and his friends see that there's no reason, and the Torah becomes to them like a sefer chosum, like a closed book, I'm afraid. Pen yivatu bohem mitoch kach b'naharusam v'yanichum le'olam v'yelchu lehevel. that they're going to forsake it. They'll leave it alone. They'll kick it. They'll rebel against it in their youth, forsake it forever, and they'll join the foolishness of the world out there. He wrote Tam v'Toelis on 612, maybe Por Aduma, he didn't exactly, maybe he did, of 612 of the mitzvahs. One mitzvah, he doesn't have a Tam v'Toelis. And it's not a mitzvah that's Megel HaMaisa, that every day his kids are going to go to the Beis HaMikdash and he's going to go to the Mizbeach and wonder why he can't bring along the honey. It's not Megel HaMaisa. He's afraid for that one mitzvah that doesn't have Tam v'Toelis, reason and benefit. He's afraid his kid is going to kick them all and rebel against all the mitzvahs. It'll be an excuse, like, ugh, mitzvahs don't have a reason. This doesn't make any sense. Everything else does. But this doesn't. Forget it. That's what he's afraid of. Doesn't mean it's going to happen to everybody. But that was a rational, reasonable consideration. And if you'll tell me that this is only for children, you know, a 13-year-old 500 years ago is faring a lot better than our children today at I don't know what age. But anyway, probably than we are. But anyway, let's leave that off. Strike that from the record. And if you'll tell me that this only applies to children, I tell you, take a look at the Ralbag in the Toelius. It's not printed in every printing, but if you want the source, I'll be glad to give it to you. But there are a few printings that do have it. I think some printings print some others, but it's definitely printed in two different printings that I've seen. It says, a Toelis from the Parsha, he says, if you want to learn, this is in Parsha's Lech Lecha, if you want to learn how to influence someone that you love to do something that's bizarre and painful, muzar ubitzar, then the first thing to do is not to tell them what you want them to do. Just tell them the benefits. You're going to have this and that and the other thing. Ooh. And then the cheshek for the benefits will mitigate how bizarre and how painful it is. And the proof is from Avraham Avinu with the Bris Milah. Avraham Avinu was being told that he has to enter into a Bris with Hashem. Hashem did not tell him that there was an operation that was to be done. He told him, if you enter into this covenant with me, you're going to have Eretz Yisrael. You're going to have generations and nations that will come forth from you. And only after the cheshek for all this benefit blinds and mitigates the pain, now he says, Zois Brisi, Himo Elohem, what you have to do. Avraham Avinu, who reached such levels that V'rotzo Lishchit Es Benoi Kedei Lasis Ritzoynecho. Hashem said, Shecht, Avraham Avinu wanted to shecht his son. Because Hashem said so. Such a person can also be affected when he doesn't understand the benefit for what he's doing. So our children have to be able to feel free to ask the question, why? I always quote my grandmother who used to say, why is a crooked letter. But why is not a crooked question. It's a very valid question. And they have to feel free to ask, and answers have to be forthcoming. Answers are appropriate. We're not mitoich shaloi lishmo bolishmo. Certainly at the younger ages, even at Avraham Avinu's age, you know, he was 99 at the time. He was, yeah. And we need to have that. It makes it easier. Knowing that there's, I have a right to ask a question. You know, they get the question. We don't ask such questions over here. Oh, you ask such a question? What's the matter with you? How could you ask such a question? Well, in my house, none of my children have asked such a question. I'm shocked. That's what you need. They'll think, number one, you don't know the answer. They'll think, number two, there are no answers. They'll think, number three, they're not even smart enough to ask a question. They will blame everybody around them, including the Torah. And inside, they'll internalize the blame that they themselves are guilty, and they'll feel no good about themselves. There goes the happiness. There goes everything. The picture goes down. It's all over. I mean, the process is a little more complicated than that. And it doesn't always happen. But that's the basic outline. So it's very important to answer our children's questions. And if we can't give an answer, you know what one of the best answers in the world is? I don't know. Reb Chatzkel Abramsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, once told me when he became the Rav, the Dayan in London, he says the first day on the new job, the old Dayan had tried to get him in. He was a young man. They said he was this great goyin and everything. The Rosh HaKol comes to ask him a question, and he asks him a simple question. He says, I don't know. The Rosh HaKol was fuming, calls up the old Dayan. The old Dayan calls Rabbi Abramsky. How can it be? You don't know such a question. What are you? He says, Vile, I know the answer. Well, the first lesson the Jews of London have to learn is that the Rav doesn't have to know the answer to everything. That's the most important lesson. We don't have to know all the answers. We have to be able to say, I don't know. Don't try to fool anybody, because you should know. I tell teachers all the time, you'll never have a classroom where you don't have one kid that has a better head than you. And if you're not straight and you're not telling the truth, they'll know, they'll get it. And I tell parents that if you think you're smart, your kids are going to be smarter. Baruch Hashem. And therefore, you got to be straight with them. You don't know the answer? Tell them. I don't know. But we're going to find out. We're going to look it up. We're going to get a book about it. We're going to ask the rabbi. We're going to ask the teacher. We're going to ask the Rosh Hashiva. We're going to do research. We're going to something. We'll learn about it together. Something. Next week, we'll come up with the answer, whatever it is. But you're important. Your question is important. The concept is important. There are questions. There are answers. It's all relevant. It all makes sense. There are benefits. That's what they have to know, and that's what they have to hear. Okay, if I may continue. I wasn't told... What? 5 more minutes I got. Okay, good. If I just to throw out one more idea to you, which I think is also very, very important. We're very critical of our children. We love them. But I'll tell you the truth, they're not so sure that we love them. Believe it or not. You know, our parents, grandparents' generation, we knew. They knew. They felt that they lived for their children. Today, our kids are not so sure that we live just for them. I recently said this to someone, and one of my kids was standing next to me, you know, an older married one. And I said, when you were growing up, did you really feel that I lived just for you? And I got such a look. I shivered to think about that look. You know, kids live for me. The old parents, they used to, that's all they lived and died for their children. Today, kids are not so sure. Whether we do or not, that's irrelevant. They have to know how much we love them. We got to tell them. Not just, love you. Show it. You love by listening more than by giving. Because giving heart and giving attention is a bigger gift than giving money or giving toys or gifts or clothes or... Well, clothes maybe for... But anyway, so give attention. Love, show love, express love. Spend time. A pachat. Someone just read this to me recently. A young man, someone in Bnei Brak. So he takes out his children, he takes his son for a walk in the park, and he sits down on the park bench. That's what he does to spend some time with each child. Puts his arm around his kid and he's talking to him. And sitting on the opposite bench is a young man, big hair, no yarmulke, you know, really like, really woof, woof, woof. And he starts to cry like a baby. And he can't stop. He's crying and crying and he can't control himself. This younger man, this whatever, gets up, walks over to this kid, sits down next to him, puts his arm around him. What are you crying about? What's the problem? Can I help you? Again, fight, crying, crying, crying. Finally, he calms down enough and he says to him, he says, had my father done that to me once, I wouldn't be what I am today. But, besides showing him love, there's something else that we have to be very careful about. We're so critical of our children because... Not only are we talking about their social skills, not only are we talking about their secular grades, not only are we talking about their dress and their conduct and their cleanliness and so forth, but we're talking about their Yiddishkeit. We're talking about their neshoma. We're talking about the dvorim o'im dimrumei shel olam. And when they violate that, we're furious. And we let them know about it. And we put them down. And we criticize them. And we berate them. And we get furious at them. And you know something? I bet, and I can't prove this scientifically, although maybe they'll figure out some way, that most of their negative responses are just to test us to see whether we love them because of who they are or because of what they do. And sometimes, oftentimes, we cause them to act like that and to go off the derech and to act so cruelly and stupidly and inappropriately because they're testing us. Say, listen, I'm not sure you love me. I'm going to see. we'll test it. We'll see if you love me. Oh, you love me because the neighbors respect you for it, and because it fits with your social strata, and because this and that, or because I'm your kaddishul, or whatever it is, you love me. But you don't love me because who I am. One of the worst things we could do to our children is to put them down. Criticize. So everybody knows you don't criticize the person, you just criticize the thing. Criticizing the thing is painful enough because the person did the thing. So you've got to be very, very, very careful. And I can only leave you with one example, which is enough to give anyone food for thought. Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, we find at the beginning, Rashi, the beginning of Parshas Dvorim, gives Teichocha to Klal Yisrael. Rashi brings, he learned from Yaakov Avinu that you only reprimand on your deathbed, because otherwise it's too painful. Your deathbed, I guess, it's the last time, we're not going to see, it's easier, so forth and so on. Yaakov calls in Ruvain, and he says to him, Ruvain, you know why I didn't give you Teichocha, why I didn't reprimand you because of your mistake that you made before? Because I was afraid that had I reprimanded you before, you would have left me lidobek be'esov ochi, to go to Esov Yeshiva. Ruvain the Tzaddik, who had already done shuva for his mistake. Yaakov, the gentle, loving father, who could have presented it in such a positive way. So gentle. Moshe Rabbeinu presented his teichocha so gently. Yaakov Avinu certainly could have done that too. He was afraid that Ruvain the Tzaddik would leave him to join with Esav the Rosho. If his father had been mechiach him on something that he did and he knew he did wrong and he did tshuva for in his lifetime before he was on his deathbed. Now, that doesn't mean we can't reprimand our children. But you know something it does? We can't reprimand them. We have to teach them. You know, there's a word, discipline. You know what the shirish of the word discipline is? I don't think English has shiroshim. But the shirish of the word should be disciple. Discipline is about teaching. Punishment is about teaching. And as horo, ein elokei mashirin. The oinish has to be just the outgrowth of a warning, of a teaching. We have to find the opportunities to teach, not when we caught them red-handed and we're going to give it to them right now while the wound is open so we can really get it in there and they'll remember it. Yeah, sure they'll remember it. They're not going to remember the lesson. They're going to remember the indecency and the pain and the embarrassment and the insult and the resentment. One act like that sometimes for the rest of their lives. Anyway, I should end on a more positive note. These are some of the thoughts. I guess the positive note is as follows. That there is a great pachad out there. We have to learn a lot. And I think that as parents, we should be taking advantage of every opportunity that exists to learn more about positive parenting to lead our children in the Derech HaYosho. There's a lot of information, by the way. I think we brought some, but I don't think we set it up, or maybe it is. If you're looking, you can pick up some over there. I don't know. Maybe it's, we'll see. Maybe not. Anyway, no, it's okay. But there's a website that we have, priority-one.org. You could find a lot of information there. But the good news I want to share with you is as follows. That today, despite the fact that so many of our kids are getting into trouble, and don't anybody here think that anyone is immune. Nobody is immune. Nobody is immune. However, the good news is that they're coming back. They're coming back with a gusto. They're coming back with a passion. In fact, those that, again, don't anyone think that therefore we're going to do all the wrong things so our kids should go off to death, so they're going to come back. But those that come back are far stronger than anyone before they left, because they've realized, they've recognized, they've seen the truth, and they're back because they want to be there. But let's try to create an environment where our children shouldn't have to go that path, where they should feel the comfort, the happiness, the fulfillment, the validity in the Derech HaTorah. And we should be able to be zeicher to see a generation of Yireyim Ushleimim. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.